Download the Cliff Central app, available now on the Apple App Store and Google Play Store.
Stay informed and up to date. It's the Daily Maverick Show, Tuesdays, 1 to 2 p.m. on cliffcentral.com.
Good afternoon. You're tuned into the Daily Maverick Show on Cliff Central. As usual, my name is Kingsley Kipuri, and I'll be your host for the next hour. I'm joined in studio by my usual partner in crime, Greg Nicholson.
Thanks for having me, as always, Kingsley.
Fantastic, man. It's been a while since we've done one of these live shows. I'm feeling a bit different now.
Yeah, you're nervous all over again, Hank. I've been pre-recording the last two shows.
It's like my 16th birthday all over again. Everybody's tweeting and you know, listening live.
Okay.
That's not at all like my 16th birthday. That's just what I tell myself. Anyway, we are joined in studio by a very exciting guest, Nonhlanhla Masina from African School for Excellence. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Now, this sound, the name, just when I hear the name, it sounds like a powerful place, man. I just picture these like giant steps in these halls of excellence.
Interesting. we don't have like halls and stuff. We actually have a very fantastic building that just came up in Nsakane.
Yep.
But I think the name honors the talent that currently is almost dismissed and assumed to not exist in our township areas, and you get an amazing surprise when you come visit our Nsakane campus.
You've mentioned that you've already started sort of mentioning this idea that one does not expect, simply does not expect excellence from township communities in South Africa today. So what sort of ignited in you this desire or intent to say, you know what, we're going to have a sort of world-class institution and we're going to place it in the township?
I'll answer that question in two parts. One is failure. So I went to school in Buhlebemfundo Secondary in Nsakane. And when I finished, everyone was excited. Oh, you're a woman and, you know, I was a girl. You're good in math and good in science. And I had been teaching my math and science classes from like 10th grade. So it was very exciting. And then I went to university and okay. I was like,
You said something in passing that I feel like we can't just gloss over. You said, I had been teaching my math and science classes.
Yes, I had. So because I don't know if people remember as early as I think 2003-04 was the start of the early phase of STAR schools. And there was a pilot in Ekurhuleni in Springs College where they'd recruit the top teachers in the region and have kids come in from nearby schools to do math, English and science during those programs. So I started that program in 10th grade and lo and behold, it was when I do things at that program on Saturday, my peers obviously wouldn't have had a chance to do that before. And there was a point where we didn't have a math teacher, you know, the classical story. And in the beginning, obviously, was just me standing up and teaching my class when no one was there. And later on, as we progressed, and by grade 11 and 12, I was given the time to actually do it and teach some of the classes. And perhaps that's where a part of my passion for education comes from, is because I've been doing it for so long.
So that's what, 15, 16 years old, and you're the one in at the top of the class, everybody yes. keeping quiet, and you're...
Yes, wow. And sadly, it meant because I lived far from the school, and I like any black child in Township South Africa, I had to do all the housework coming back from school. And when I finished making dinner and serving and washing dishes, I'd be tired. And now I still have to do what you just said. Tomorrow, I stand in front of my peers and teach. And you can't do that stuff unless you're properly prepared. So I'd go to bed early and be up by 3 a.m. to prep for my classes, to do my homework and to do some of my studying. I guess that's when I learned to work hard, I guess. But the stakes were quite high. I can't stand in front of my peers and just like not know my business. That's that piece. Even with that level of hard work and I guess my peers at that time worked as hard, if not harder. But when we finished matric, only two of us made it into university that year. And only one of us managed to finished the first degree and now I've gone on to have postgraduate degrees after that. But even for me, having that first degree, I remember the first term of first year was traumatic. And I realized within the first week that they lied to me.
I mean, that's interesting because, I mean, if you're able to teach, you know, grade 10, 11, 12, I'd imagine that you'd have been a really excellent student by the time you finished your matric.
Ha! That's what we'd like to believe.
Okay, so that's the assumption because that means you not only understand it for yourself, but are able to sort of transfer the knowledge.
Right. I mean, there's great value in peer teaching and there's a lot of learning that happens there. But,
still,
in terms,
you feel that wasn't enough?
No, it wasn't.
To survive in first year.
I think for kids are actually quite smart. Mm. They figure out patterns and they can recognize it and they'll always figure out the shortest way. Most adults wouldn't be able to figure out in the room. And our exam currently, when I wrote that exam, it wasn't to test my cognitive ability, but it was to test how well I had figured out the shortcuts, which is what we teach kids now. We teach a lot of procedures, which is all good and well if you're going to go into an assembly line and work in a factory. Mm. But our economy is changing and the skill set that's required for us to have is different to what it was in 1940.
Okay, so we are now at, so you've been what we are assuming was excellent, but we suppose we realized it wasn't a bit later. You've been teaching one of two people to make it into university, and what's your experience now? You get to Wits, and you're studying something really hectic. Let me find you're studying molecular biology. Jesus.
So for my first degree, I did molecular biology.
You don't play around. Eh? You weren't even just going to ease into this thing and do like something light. You were like, I want to study molecular biology.
Funny story, actually. So I always wanted to be in the molecular biology from like...
I know. Hey? You're just saying that like it's every kid's dream.
I remember, I think that time my parents always thought I wanted to be a doctor. So okay. They used to tell people, if you ask them, like, what is your child wanting to be? Ah, she wants to be a doctor.
Sort of the understanding of your ambition.
Yes. Yeah. And then, but it only crystallized. There was a time when my dad was sick and I called the ambulance because no one was home and I rode in the ambulance with him. You know, they pull a stretcher and they put him in the ambulance. Mm. And we sat there and we waited for close to 2 hours. Eventually, he saw the doctor and it seemed he had some bacterial infection that was causing his system to shut down. Mm. You know, they mentioned it in passing. They give him an antibiotic quickly and he starts regaining his strength. They don't admit him into the hospital. They send us off at 6 o'clock at night and then we're walking home after dark. And I remember saying, you know, I would really like to know what caused this ailment that you had. Okay. So that's where it is. I'm very much interested in the cause rather than the effect or treatment thereof. So that's that. And I'm just trying to revert back to your
yeah,
question.
Please.
Please ask it again because I've gone off in different
Okay,
ways.
So we were sort of following this journey where you sort of inspired to study molecular biology. You've been teaching your peers and so on and you've just arrived. You're now in Joburg, you're at Wits, you've arrived.
I've arrived.
The celebration, everybody's excited for you. You are the
And
you
the
are
whole
the
community
hope.
Comes in to pack the Jeez. Blankets into the van yep. and everyone is just like, ah, you better not fail.
Nobody says that, but there's this implied feeling of yes. we're happy for you, but don't.
No. Don't. Yeah. So then I got to Wits and obviously it's very exciting, yeah. But very quickly reality kicks in. Mm. You sit in a class and again, I think this is what talks to my point earlier, because I could pass my exams then, didn't mean that in terms of my cognitive development and my ability to solve complex problems was where, if you pass a science test right now, we assume you're there when we haven't taught you those skills. I very quickly realized that I think chemistry and physics were like the it. They were like, well, people lie to you. You can't think. You're not good at solving problems. And furthermore, your language skills are non-existent. Mm. And non-existent, and you have to fix that. So in the first few blocks, for first semester, I strategically tried working through firstly my English, and then secondly trying to be more active in seeking out problem solving strategies and learning some of the techniques that was I very clearly didn't have from day one.
Wow. Okay. So already starting to find this gap between your sort of
myself and my peers.
Perceived sort of ability to cope compared to everybody else.
Yep. And that's why at the end of that, I struggled a bit in the first block. By the second block, I think I was getting the hang of things. But as soon as I managed to not drown and take my first breath, I remember going back to my principal at Buhle Bemfundo, Mr. Mnunyana, and I said to him, I need you to give me access to the grade 11s and 12s. I need to prepare them for the hell that's about to come after matric. And so began my role in education. And that I started a program where we would do math, English, obviously. Math, English, and science. And we had this class where we called it like problem solving life after matric. The name changed each year, but that program ran from 2007 till 2009 at Buhle Bemfundo and nearby Gelukdal secondary school. But by the end of 2009, that September, I quickly became disillusioned by what I was actually doing, because I would sit with kids throughout the vacation period in June, and you see a lot of progress, and you see kids starting to attempt and be more comfortable in problem solving sessions, and you see them developing their own thinking and how much they apply themselves. But then they go back to their schools. You come back in September and you're like, well, so we have to start afresh again. So then that's the journey there, and it's what's informed the founding of ASC and what ASC has become.
Why, you mentioned you went back to your principal, to your old high school, right? And you wanted access to the grade 11s and 12s.
Yeah.
But you mention it like that's what everybody does, you know, every university student when they're doing well and learning about life and lessons that they should have learned it before.
Yep.
But why did you go back? Because I don't think many people do that, right? Like, we all learn things along the way that we could share with our with the youth, you know, those coming behind us.
Right.
But why did you go back? What drives you to help others?
That's a good question. I think a lot about our kids when you ask me that question, our scholars at ASC. It's time you challenge them to do something different, or you say they have a leadership program and you say you have to come up with a program that you will develop, and you decide what it is. It could be a for-profit venture, it could be a non-profit venture. You have a clear landscape and you can take it wherever you want to take it. It always goes back to social type enterprises, to enterprises that empower the communities that they're from. I don't think I'm unique in that aspect. I think a lot of the people that I grew up with have tried one way or the other to give back and try and change their community from grassroots up. I think it's and also it has to do with my community, how I was raised, and the school that I went to, and the sense of community there. Without those teachers, as much as, you know, I figured out, I was helped to figure out the shortcuts and those people were actually very, very supportive, to the point where there was a matric dance. I didn't have a dress, nor did I have a date, nor did I have money to pay for the matric dance. My teachers bought me a dress. One organized me a date. And one...
Who was it? Can you give him a shout out?
Let's get him to call in.
That's right.
No!
And just tell us what it was like.
Where's Duncan? We need Duncan on there to research this.
No. To things like that, to heartwarming things like my brother passing away. My younger brother passed away right in the middle of my prelim exams, and my parents couldn't do anything, so I had to go in and organize my brother's funeral, and I didn't think I'd sit for exams. Mind you, even my WITS application, I hadn't put in by that time, and the closing date was coming in. My teachers came to my house and they said, we've paid the application fee, you need to fill in this, you need to make your selection, and we'll drop off the form for you. That's the type of community that I come from, and it wouldn't be appropriate for me to now all of a sudden be obsessed by just me.
I'm curious as to where those people are now. Some of the teachers who helped you and the principal you've mentioned, are they still in the community? Are they still people you interact with as you
so
sort of gone
funny
on?
Story. I'll start with I'm just realizing I say funny story a lot.
You've just got great story.
My headmaster then, Mr. Mnunyana, is then he was actually the deputy head and the science teacher, and now he's the head of Buhle Bemfundo, and he helped with the founding of ASC Tsakane. Those who have visited ASC in our early days will remember that we started in prefab structures and had leased
land. What do you mean prefab structures?
I mean like like, ngesiZulu izozo, hey? Like, you take it and you put it down. Okay. And then we had a school.
Okay.
The year before that, the November, there was nothing. And then by January, we had a school.
Wow.
And that school was within my former high school's yard. And even selling the idea to the community and helping people understand it and what this education we're proposing would do for the community. He was very like on board. Mm. Him and his SGB were very helpful in the founding of that. Some of the teachers, like I'm still in touch with most of them actually. Some have moved out of the school. Mem Litole is one of the principals in Davidson. Some the geography teacher, Mem Pito, is still at the school. And Mem Rangaka has left recently, and the teacher who paid for my matric dance stuff, Mem Mahana, is still at the school. I think she's one of the best biology teachers in the country.
Wow.
But I still keep in touch with most of those teachers.
Yeah, it sounds like a really strong sense of community. You're already telling us the early days of trying to put this thing up, your prefab structures, which you mentioned, and I'm curious. The journey since then. So what was the process of, so you decide I want to start a school, I want to start a center of excellence?
In the beginning I had no idea I wanted to start a school. I at the end of that 2009 period, I was very set that I was very sure that also short-term programs don't make a big difference. So which is what I was trying to do. And those support programs have a very small impact, and if you try and measure it, if kids go back to the mainstream, as most education research will show, they're not scalable and they don't have as much impact. So then around 2010, when I was doing my honors, I was still very much, I still had the hunger to go back and do something more.
Mm.
Because I did want to change. I still do want to change my community for the better. I think if any major change for this country is to come, it's not going to be a top-down approach, but it's going to be perhaps a combination of that. But the strongest piece to that is going to be from grassroots up. And I think a large piece to that is education. So then by 2009, I still had that. 2010, I met Jay Kloppenberg, who was the founder of AAC. So we started talking about, he asked me about my experience in large, this is a funny thing with Jay, because that conversation didn't start off with, oh, so what do you do? Like, he was like, so Nontlantla, who are you? Where are you from? I was like, oh, I'm from Tsakane. So a lot of people in that group had gone to the top tier independent schools in the country. And obviously that was the social group at that time. And he was like, oh, you're not from this group. Something is special about you. So then we started talking about, so what do you think informs you being part of this group? Funny enough, he posed that question that way. And then we started talking about my ideas and experience within education. And he started asking things like, you know, he's also thought about the same thing. Why is it that very few students from communities like Tsakane get to make it into universities and I guess the then social group? And then we started talking about the very early stages of AAC, which initially we thought was good schools exist, but they're expensive and not accessible to the masses. So maybe we should try and figure out a way to either give the kids access to that money. So initially it was a microfinance type.
Rather than make a school, give the good students money to go to the
school. But then we very quickly realized the solution needed to be much more than that, and which I can talk to you a bit more.
Absolutely. Just quickly, we have a message from Darren from PE, and he's asking whether there's talks for you to be our next Minister of Education.
So
you heard it here first.
So at the beginning of this show, I was asked if I've been media trained or not, and I said, "Well, I haven't." And part of that is I have very strong views in this space and others. I don't think I'm made to be a politician.
Okay.
So I doubt that would be the case.
But like a true politician, you're not ruling it out.
That's it. That's it. She didn't say I'm not going to be. She said I have very strong views and. You know,
if we were to talk about systemic change, perhaps it is in the cards, because I don't think a few good independent schools here and there will change the current status quo. I think if we are to change the current balance in the country, it's to really change the quality of our education.
That's it. If you're just tuning in, we are talking to the almost next Minister of Education, Nonkululeko Masina from African School for Excellence, just talking us through sort of her journey to founding one of those, an exciting, you know, project, an education project that's happening in the country.
And one of the best schools in the country.
There we go. We're just going to go into a short break and we'll be right back after this.
It's back. Are you Jawsy Tough? Cycle through tunnels, head over floating bridges, and disappear into colossal stormwater drains. Why? Because you're a machine, and the city is your trail. With two separate routes, 22 and 54 Ks, choose your path and go where no mountain biker has gone before. On 6 September, ride the Hollard Juma. Brought to you by AdReach and Joburg City Parks and Zoo. Challenge accepted. Juma.co.za.
Good afternoon. You're tuning back into the Daily Maverick, Sean Cliff Central. It's just about 1:30. So we're talking about the potential of having extremely high quality and affordable education in this country. And that's, I mean, that's the big golden key that we've been debating in, you know, for, you know, since 94, about how on earth are we going to crack this thing. And so we're joined by Nonkululeko from African School for Excellence to tell us how we can figure this thing out.
I think it actually starts with us sitting down and thinking about what does good quality education mean? What is good quality? So in the past, when we started around 2010, we looked at, you know, there are good schools, so obviously that's a good indication that good quality education exists. Let's look at the good schools, what they're doing well, and how we can reduce the costs, eventually after the microfinance piece, how can we reduce the cost of what they're doing to be able to provide that quality education at scale in an affordable way.
So you said sort of version one was, let's just give them the money to go to good schools. And then you trash that and say, no, we actually need to build from the ground up a school that is affordable.
Right. And so in the past, what we thought then was, if we separate out specific tasks that don't necessarily need highly skilled teacher facilitation, and we strategically place those in a way that leverages the teaching, then you're able to, one, use fewer teachers to improve the quality of education depending on what those activities are. Perhaps I should make an example.
Yeah, I'm curious. what is the kind of thing that you can do with maybe perhaps not the best and most expensive teachers, but it still adds value to a lot of students that are go?
So the funny story, this is, I should stop saying funny story. The funny thing is, when we think of, if you think of like a business case and how some of the, I guess, the smartest people we consider in any economy solve problems, they don't sit down and have this person telling them, this is the problem, this is the solution. Typically, they break out into a small group, a small syndicate type group, and they try and firstly define the problem, secondly try and figure out different solutions where each individual is putting in their view of what the solution is, and then third would be propose that what they think is a solution. Now, not always is that the solution, but sometimes it is the right solution. And that is the exact same thing that needs to go into the classroom. So how we see, for example, I'll give an example of fractions in sixth grade, when kids are having to be introduced into a concept like fractions, you could actually lose a lot by having them sit down in a classroom and tell them, this is a fraction. It's not going to work out. In fact, you need to engage their brains and allow them to be able to think through things. So how we see it is, if you give them an appropriate problems, a problem, you mentioned Freud earlier, and I'll mention Vygotsky, or one of the education psychologists. But if you put them in a setting where you give them problems that, one, appeal to them, two, get their brain juices to start going, and puts them in a cognitive zone called a zone of proximal development, kids actually, one, sometimes come up with solutions to problems that they don't know, or two, they start, like, if you do it right, by the time you step into the room, they're jumping and they're ready to engage in that aspect. So what we came up with was, a model in which we would incorporate that in every class. Kids start off with a problem. We acknowledge that they are not just empty vessels that the teacher needs to fill with information, but rather they are brains that are developing and they are making their own connections, which will be the first class in anything that we do is a problem-solving class. And what it does for some of the kids that we work with, you see a massive improvement in their own character, character development, because they start acknowledging that their view matters. Because the next piece of that is they go through a rotation. So they start off in this problem-solving session, say it's fractions. Mm-hmm. No one goes in and teaches you this is a fraction.
But is there a teacher in that session?
There is a student teacher who's... So this is a teacher in training. Most of them are registered with UNISA, but they're not doing any teaching. They're facilitating to ensure that the classroom remains safe and that the right type of discussions are happening. Okay. Never at any point do they walk around and give you an answer.
And say, guys.
And because, you know, that can halt your thought process and your development thereof cognitively. So then when they move from that class, they didn't go to the class with the teacher. And that is also not a traditional, like... I don't know, when I say that, it probably wouldn't speak well to the model. It's not like kids are just sitting down and they're being fed information, but rather teams come in and they're presenting what they think is the solution to this fraction problem that they've just solved.
But they don't know it's a fraction problem yet.
But they don't know it's a fraction
problem. So you have one app or you've got six people or
something. Exactly. A very practical problem.
Make a plan. Okay.
And then each team presents what they think is the appropriate plan. And then the teacher, during that process, helps them name what they're seeing in context of what they've just presented. Now, that speaks volumes to the communities that we serve, because those kids aren't used to having to stand in a room and present what they think is a solution. And what you see over time is a massive growth in their own self, in their own confidence, which then impacts how much they're willing to engage in class. And then the third class to that is after they leave that class, each class lasts about 30 to 40 minutes, depending on which grade they're at. And the third class after that is for kids to be able to engage with their passions and I guess be able to learn at their own pace. Right now, for the grade sevens in that class and grade six, we use a program called Khan Academy, where they can pace their own learning. Because you can teach till you're blue in the face, but unless someone has a chance to engage with materials or content and define what it means for them, you don't get anywhere. So the third piece of that model is very independent and is very student-centric, and the kids drive it. But obviously, we were able to see the data on the back end of that and be able to teach appropriately to that. And that third class is also facilitated by a student teacher in training.
Wow. I'm curious about the student to teacher ratios in all this, because it sounds like...
It's a lot higher.
Sounds like this... Because there's a different person at every station.
There's a different person at every station. But if you think about it, if what we call our lead teacher at the center...
Who's a teacher? in our traditional understanding of
teaching.
Teaching,
who'll be a teacher. In my personal view, the one of the best teachers in the country. So that teacher, if you consider them as the teacher, the overall ratio is sitting at 1:75. But they're only dealing with a subset.
Oh, if you take the professional, like in quotes, professional teacher,
right,
to student, it's one.
Because the other teachers are also SACE registered and they're in the
world. They're also studying.
Right, they're also studying. So it's 1:75, but that teacher is only dealing with a subset of kids at any given time. That allows us to be able to maintain the intimacy of the classroom. So you have much smaller class sizes, but they're being flagged by very specific activities that in fact make our quality shoot up. There's a reason why our kids are scoring within the top 10 percentile in the annals, because they're used to thinking, they're used to problem solving, and that shoots the quality up.
I mean, you mentioned a statistic right there about the top 10%, but I imagine you have to spend a lot of time actually just getting people up to speed if they're coming from a previously very sort of broken education system. Surely you spend a lot of time just getting them to the right basics.
Right. So that's assuming. So that's assuming. A lot of time assumes that you haven't properly thought about what you need to do to help catch those kids up. So It turns out if a kid can barely read or write, trying to drill science to them is not going to work. So for the first year, we do focus on accelerating language skills, as I tried when I was in first year university. And secondly, accelerating thinking and problem solving skills, which we largely do through the math for the first year. And once we've done that, we've seen an exponential growth with everything, which most education research points out as if you can develop the kids' cognitive ability, so ability to sit down and think through things and be able to be abstract problem solver, they're able to shoot through everything. Now, obviously, in this case, we also need to address the language piece. If they can access the things that they need to think about, they are amazing.
I mean, that was a thing, because that's a big conversation in the country. It's just around languages. Should be, how much emphasis should be placed on the local languages versus economies functioning in, you know, in English and other international languages. What is sort of the school's stance on that?
Well, our stance is in the space, I want our kids from Dzagane to be globally competitive, because the skill set you need to cope here in the country is the exact same thing you need in New York or in Boston. And I think our kids can compete at that level. And that's what we're setting them up for. But they are still sitting for an isiZulu second language exam, which is the language that a majority of them speak. I think that becomes a very complex discussion, because in the space that we're in, say in Dzagane, you're sitting in a class with close to 6 or 7 languages. Right now, I speak 9 languages. Which one do you say is my first? My father was Swati. My mom was Ndebele Swati. I grew up in isiZulu community. My neighbors were Tsonga, and those were the kids I played with growing up. So that's what I spoke. So it's a little bit. it's a very complex discussion.
Sort of, Greg.
No, I just wanted to say, so you've been sort of through some of the days and the years. Where do these kids get to? You know, what's the aim to get them out to? Because you've got a different system to the rest of the kids out there, right? In most general schools,
right? So there's a 2-part answer to that. So the first one is our kids are still going to graduate in matric. Right now, the Dzagane campus is registered as a Cambridge school. So our government recognizes that as a foreign school. Mm. We're still in discussions to try and see if they can still sit for the matric without having the overly prescribed what they do in 7th grade, 8th grade, and 9th grade. But our argument is they can sit for that exam and do well. Right now, they're going to sit
while learning their own curriculum mostly.
So curriculum is an interesting thing, because science is science is science. Math is math is math. But what's important for us is, can you think? Can you be able to apply yourself when given a problem? And do you have strong leadership skills? And that comes through in everything that we do. So right now, the expected pieces, our kids are going to sit for an A-level exam when they finish, so that they're able to be globally competitive. Obviously, that's still a work in progress, because we haven't had our matric class yet.
Okay.
So what we envision for our kids is to be able to go into any university in the world and do well. But from a systemic impact, we do want to start changing the education discourse. As a result of that, we're very open to what exam kids sit at the end of matric, and we want to see how best we can have the greatest impact. So that's why I say science is science and math is math. What's important is, what am I doing in seventh grade? Am I learning? Am I being given space to cognitively develop? Is anyone investing time to help me learn how to be a better leader in that space, so that I'm able to access things? Because as I grow up in education and in the world, I'm expected to collaborate with people. I'm expected to be a leader. I'm expected to have very strong personal skills. I'm also expected to be a thinker. I'm expected to be an abstract reasoner. How is that going to work if you don't teach me?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you almost said for a second there, like, we're so confident in our problem-solving sort of ability, they can bring the matric exam, they can bring
basically
the O-level exam.
That's
the feeling I got. It's like,
with a bit of study,
bring whatever exam you've got.
That's the thing. It's content.
We can do it.
Yes, exactly.
I love that.
That is my view. If you can fix, if you can help me develop how I think and how I reason, you can give me a week, give me a month to study that content and sit through that exam. Like I said in the beginning of my, when I was relaying my matric experiences, kids figure out these small things. Sorry, not, the procedural stuff. If you want to learn, have me learn procedures, that's fine. I can sit and learn procedures, but let's make sure I can think. So like when I step into first year university at Wits, when I'm required to, I don't panic. Let's not celebrate the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm. Do you, when you look at the broader education system, do you think a lot of these lessons could be applied across the South African public education system?
I mean, I'd love that. That's an ambition of mine. I also acknowledge that it would be a lot. So our ambition is for the first for the next, say, 5 to 10 years, we have an ASC Dzakane type school in all major townships where we start changing the discourse to say, well, quality education is doable at a very at a much lower cost than we thought, because right now we're spending as a half of what government spends per kid, and we're able to get what we have. So start changing the discourse in one. But at a systemic standpoint, I'd love for us to start changing how we do things, because there isn't value in us pumping kids into a classroom, expecting them to be like empty ATMs and our teachers to be like this bank of information. And we're just passing this information down to kids. And at the end of the exam, we punch in our pin and we expect to get an exemplar matrix certificate. But obviously that needs to come with a bit of proof, and that's what we're taking as a challenge.
That is a great metaphor.
I know, I'm still looking at the
picture.
That is
an excellent metaphor.
And I've got that worry in my head of whenever I go to the ATM of just being declined. And that's like with all these kids.
It's a bit that's really good. So I didn't mean to laugh. That's actually really deep. Nonklankla, I'm glad you mentioned, you know, the big words, which are cost and scale, right? Because I mean, you mentioned sort of social enterprise and nonprofits that are able to do good work and important work, but unfortunately in very specific environments. So, for example, in Tsakane, where you have bind with the community, you're from there, you know, our school was able to help you out with land in the initial phase. So you've got all these things that make a very good environment for a very strong pilot.
Right.
But what happens when we move to the next township, and what happens when we don't have that kind of community support and so on?
Interestingly, we have a school in Tsakane. Yeah. We've run programs we call Accelerate, holiday programs targeted on sixth graders doing math, English, and leadership, the African School for Excellence way. And that's ran in Soweto. That's ran in Etwatwa. That's ran in Ivory Park. I spearheaded most of those communities, and I have no experience in those communities, but those programs, Soweto was actually our first, and we had up to 157 kids, and that experience was amazing. Ivory Park to date, I still get meetings, messages from parents and kids asking, when are you coming here? So in terms of is the student specials of unique to Tsakane, the student profile that we have right now, the answer is no. From a teacher perspective, because at least 70% of our teachers at the school right now live within a 2-3 kilometer radius of the school. Are those people unique to Tsakane? No, because when I've gone into Ivory Park and when I've gone to Etwatwa, we've dealt and used people from within those communities. Obviously, the piece to that is true is the land component and the infrastructure costs that comes with starting these entities. And then that's an ongoing piece that we're constantly trying to what we're trying to think about and be smart about how we're sourcing those funds and also how we're making those decisions. But at scale, once a school is put in by scale, I mean, once it's filled to capacity, the school can not only carry its own running costs, it has a buffer that enables it to do everything else. So we've set it up such that the school should be self-sustaining. Obviously, like any other business, we still have that dip with startup funding, which is what we're constantly trying to raise and be smart about how we raise it.
Okay, so still in that sort of initial phase before
the infrastructure
it's up and running. And
from an infrastructure standpoint, we've covered a lot of ground in that space, and we're actually launching a new entity in partnership with a few education partners in the country that will help us solve that problem so that we can unlock the infrastructure a bit.
Okay, just when you said new entity with some partners, I just pictured an offshore account somewhere.
Never no, true.
We once did a show on how profits are being siphoned out of the country, so I was wondering.
Right, so this is, I mean, that's a good point to make. This wouldn't be one of that.
No, I'm kidding. Don't humor me with an answer. Greg, yeah.
Yeah, no, I was just wondering, have we spoke about the cost at all? Of this, how much does it cost if I want to send my child there in the future, which is unborn? But if I, you know, how much?
Hawks.
So right now, seeing that your child is not yet born, the current
or
cost...
Or conceived, I just want to point out.
Let's move on from Greg's fertility.
The current cost for us to educate a kid per year is sitting at a little over 8,500. Okay. But at cost to the parent is paying about 200, 240 per month. Some kids get scholarships based on the ability to pay, and we raise that money in grant type funding. But right now at cost it's sitting at 600 rand a month per kid. By the time your kid is born, we hope to have brought down that cost, because we continue to innovate in that space, and we're trying to bring that cost down so that it doesn't become a question of access. It's just choice.
Can you tell me about the conversation? So when you go to these parents, you know, parents who are maybe thinking of enrolling these kids, or you're trying to get new students or anything like that, are the parents wary of trying something new with their children, or what's that conversation like?
So the person who's had most of the one-on-one conversations with these is our current deputy head, Melusi Khatebe, at the school. So I'll talk to the ones that I've had personally. Before that, I'll tell you another funny story. So like I mentioned, the Takane campus started off with prefab structures. But our first parents' meeting, where we introduced the first head, the founding head of AC Mampulanga, was in a marquee. We rented flooring. It had just started raining. It was the beginning of November. There were no prefab structures there. We had no uniform. We had decided on a color. You know, I had different shades of blue. And then I said to the parents, so this is what I think the uniform is going to look like. And by the way, this is the person who's going to be heading the school. And in addition to that, you need to pay registration fee before the end of November so that we can start preparing for your kids next year. There was nothing except for that marquee. It was muddy, and we were still doing site works to try and prepare for the prefab structures coming in and being set down. And we had, at that time, 85 parents in that room who all paid registration fee.
Really?
Yes. So the answer to that is parents perhaps are wary about the different approach. All we have to do is take them along on the journey. And we had done that the previous June, because we ran the accelerator program before launching the school.
Okay.
So they got a sense of what are these people actually proposing from their kids. But before we even ran that program in June, we went and met with the parents in their respective schools to try and explain exactly what this June program coming is. And they felt part of the process.
Mm-hmm. I think you have a supporter on Twitter here. It's at trackterrorism.org.
We don't endorse that handle.
Yeah, says what matters more is an education that creates a foundation for thinking. So it sounds like there are supporters out there for you.
Yeah, and you focus on problem solving rather than sort of learning the content.
Yep.
I'm curious how attached
content becomes easier when you can think. You go into deep understanding, trying to understand how, say, if you were to be given a periodic table and tell kids, you need to memorize this periodic table now. Yeah. It has no meaning unless you understand, oh, okay, they're electrons. And what do these electrons do, and why do they matter? You can only get to that point when you get to the cognitive piece.
And I hear you. I'm curious how... I'm still on this thing of scale and how we get, you know, as many children or students as possible through the kind of quality of education you're describing. And I'm wondering, how attached are you to ASC as a brand, versus if you could potentially absorb the model and and do it theoretically at every school in the country, would that be something you're open to?
Definitely. At a systemic level, if we start having those discussions, we're very, very open, and we've started having early discussions with some parts of, okay, of government.
Okay.
That is like the end game.
Okay, that's the big win.
The big win. Let's change the status of education in the country. Let's improve the quality of education overall. But what I was alluding to in the earlier pieces, now we can start having that conversation with certain people, because ASC Tsakane exists and people can come in and see it, and we need to have a few more of those where we replicate it, which is what we're working on for next year, and so that we can prove that it's doable in different contexts, as you pointed out earlier.
Yeah, I mean, I see that's the big question for me. Greg, there's hope for your unborn child yet.
Yes, definitely.
I'm just thinking, all I can think of is, with the reduced amount of teachers, if I didn't have to have Mrs. Brady in grade 9, if I went to ASC, I'd be there just to avoid Mrs. Brady. I would have been happy.
But we've also been able to engage the different, there's probably a reason why you didn't like Miss Brady. We're able to engage the different ways in which you learn. You learn by being probed, being asked the right questions, or having you think about the right questions. And then there is a part to that that helps with your own, what's called metacognition, where you think about your own thinking. That is where Miss Brady would have been in. But when you start...
I don't think that was Mrs. Brady's approach.
No, Clark, we don't have too much time left, but I'd love to hear... We've talked a lot about the model and the bigger stuff, but I'm curious about the students themselves. So I'd love if you could just tell us a story of, you know, one student and perhaps their journey into ASC and now in the new model and how that's going.
I have quite a lot of stories. Perhaps if you ask me a specific question.
I mean, of perhaps a way where you've seen the model really work. Not in the way you tell us on radio, but where you saw John and you were like, okay, this is for real, when seeing their learning and their progress.
So, yes, there was in 2012, we ran our first pilot in Tsakane with the three-week vacation program we call Accelerate. And there was a kid, Mvuyo, and some teachers complained like he was disruptive in class, he didn't pay attention, he'd sit and start drawing. and when he started off, he was two grades below his level. And he's grown immensely. Right now he's reading and he's within the top 10, not even top 1% of the school. And he thinks so deeply. He leads the writing club. And recently I had a conversation with him where our school hall, we recently built a building in Tsakane, as I mentioned, and there was an owl in the hall.
Okay.
And then so this is just so show the lateral thinking of this young man, and he says to me, ma'am, do you see what your kids are doing? I hadn't noticed, but some of the girls were throwing sticks at an owl in the hall.
In the hall?
Our roof was quite high. And I asked him, so what why are they doing that? Like, ma'am, they think that it brings bad luck and then I asked him, but what do you think? He was like, no, they don't understand that because they litter in the space, the owl comes here for the food. and then it's also a comfortable environment for the owl to stay, and it means no harm. And I said, how do you get there? And so he started telling me about the books that he's been reading to try and understand this owl habitat preference business. And he was trying to relate to what he was seeing in the space. And this is a kid who, if he was sent to a traditional school, they would have put him on drugs because they would have said he has a very short attention span. It turns out he enjoys thinking.
Wow.
Okay. So you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Africa School for Excellence, man. That's what we're hearing in some of the stories that can come out of that problem-solving approach you've described.
Yep. All we have to do is keep the kids engaged. If they're bored, we need to change what we're doing.
Okay. Clankla, unfortunately, that's all the time we have.
Can you
in like 10 seconds tell us, or tell our listeners rather, how they can get a hold of you and the great work you're doing?
The best way currently to get hold of us is email us at info@ase.org.za. Unfortunately, our website is still under construction. We also have a Twitter handle at...
We will African tweet. Schools.
African Schools. And I have a Twitter handle at Nontlantla Masin, missing an A for some reason. I would invite people to come and visit our campus and try out and test out if this is true. And that's in Tsakane. Drop us a line at info and we'll arrange for that visit.
Sorry, I got the Twitter handle wrong. Their Twitter handle is at ASE South Africa.
Fantastic. Well, Clark, thank you so much. I want to come meet Vuyo for myself one of these days and see that crazy lateral thinking that he's sort of demonstrated through your story.
And that's true for everybody.
Fantastic. That's all the time we have. Please, please, please listen and share the podcast, Daily Maverick Show, Tuesdays 1 to 2 p.m.
Stay informed and up to date. It's the Daily Maverick Show, Tuesdays 1 to 2 p.m. on cliffcentral.com.